Blog Talk Radio.
Audi race fans, how the hell are you tonight? Steve Billmeyer here, also known as Big Sweat, and your host for tonight's episode of Racing with Big Sweat. It's going to be a good one, folks. We got a man on tonight that's going to give us a good show and give you a lot of different opinions on what's happening both in the local short track scene and in NASCAR. So we're going to talk some. Hang around with us. It's going to be good. In the studio with me, as always, my producer, director, and all-around friend, Mr. CJ Sports. How are you tonight, CJ? That good, huh?
There you go. You finally unmuted me. Doing great tonight. Glad to be in the studio. Glad to be able to hang out with you guys tonight.
Cool deal. And on the other side of the room is my co-host, the man from up north. Say hello to Mike Perricone. How are you tonight,
hey.
Mike?
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Just glad to be here.
Looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, definitely. For those that don't know, we've got an icon from up north in Northeast Modified Racing, the man, a championship-winning car owner, a race-winning car owner for a number of years. So we're looking forward to having Mario Fiore in tonight to talk with us and let us know what's going on. He hadn't called in yet, so I might kill a little time. What do you think, CJ? What do you think of Talladega this weekend? Who's going to be strong? Yeah, I agree with him. All right, Mike, you take it. Who do you like at Talladega?
You know, that's such a toss-up, that track. I don't know. But I know that Harvick does well, and he's been on a hot streak this year so far. So maybe, you know, with that track, it depends so much on where your car is at a given time and where your teammates are behind you, you know.
Yeah, definitely so.
I'm here.
But it ought to be a pretty good show. There's a lot of cars that can win that race, that's for sure.
Right.
I don't know who I'm looking at yet. There's just so many, you can't count anybody out.
And then if you have a favorite or you think the driver's going to win or the team's going to win, they could get caught up in a big one it's all over with, you know, so you never know.
Yeah, definitely so. There's some drivers you can't count out, like Dale Jr. and Jimmy Johnson are two that come to mind pretty quick. It's going to be interesting to see what the Toyotas do since Joe Gibbs Racing's been so dominant.
Hamlin won Daytona, and Daytona is a little bit like Talladega if you talk about Super Speedway. But, again, those two tracks are so different, you know, you never know with Talladega. Talladega is such a toss-up.
Yeah, definitely so. But JGR has definitely shown some power at all the tracks they've gone to. And like you said, Denny Hamlin won down at Daytona, so you know that program's going to be strong. I just think it's time for Chevrolet to get one, pull one out of the hat, so to speak. But it would only be because of, I think, a problem that JGR might have or could experience. I don't see them running bad at all, really.
Nope.
You there, CJ?
I'm here. I forgot that I muted my button again real quick.
Let us know what you think about Talladega.
I really expect, unfortunately, to see Dale Jr. up front. What I would really like to see happen, I don't think we got to see the performance we was hoping to see out of Tony Stewart. And it seems that Jr. and Tony Stewart fare pretty well together. I'd like to see them both work the way up front and see Tony Stewart have a great weekend.
Yeah, it's a chance that Stewart Haas Racing can have a good run out of all four cars, really. Tony's got a lot to prove. Kevin Harvick, always a tough man down there in Talladega. Kurt Busch has run up front there, had a second with Ryan Newman 1 year, and Danica sat on the pole at Daytona, so you know she can go. But enough about that. Let's go ahead and bring our guest in tonight. People, like I mentioned earlier, this man is known through Northeast Modified Racing, and he's had a long career in it, and he's going to clue us in on what he thinks about a lot of things. Mario, you there, buddy?
Yes, I am, Steve, and thank you for the invite.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Oh, I appreciate it. I appreciate it, believe me.
I've seen some posts of yours on Facebook, and you seem to have pretty strong opinions about what's happening with racing now, so that's pretty much what I wanted to explore. How do you see local short track racing right now, the different divisions and everything? Are they showing strength, or are they looking rather weak?
I'd say it's probably at the – staying at the same level right now, certainly isn't what it was 20 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, but I mean, it's a tough economy. I think an important thing that motorsports misses a lot on is marketing. Motorsports
yeah.
marketing is still stuck in the 80s, where you see stick and ball sports, like obviously NFL. I mean, they're Madison Avenue, you know, they're top of
yeah.
the line, and I think that's really important in this day and age, and I don't think enough emphasis is put on the marketing end of it. I mean, we were lucky, don't get me wrong, in the 80s and 90s, we had Winston, and they did so
yeah.
much for local racing. You know, they sponsored a race at every racetrack. They did local advertising, national advertising, and we did photo shoots for them down in Rockingham and at Rougemont. And believe me, they paid us very well. And they'd use those photos throughout the year, like ourselves and Mike McLaughlin's bunch and Brett Bodine. I mean, they're never going to replace Winston. They ain't no way. But I think the marketing is very lax in local racing right now. And I think that hurts.
Definitely.
And we don't really
so
have the local stars anymore, you know. And when I was growing up, obviously Riverside Park was across you know, from where I lived, and those drivers were heroes. I mean, they were heroes. Believe me, you know. I go there, and Billy Greco, Dick Dixon, Danny Colullo, Ed Tatno, Buddy Krebs. I mean, them guys, they're legendary today, 50 years later. I mean, they were heroes. You know? You either had talent or you weren't driving a race car. You couldn't buy a ride back then. There was no such thing. You know, that was all on talent. And, you know, today, obviously, things have changed, and it's expensive. And, you know, a lot of people, there's those that can afford it and those that can't. And that talent doesn't really enter into it like it used to. And you very even hear talent mentioned, you know, when they're talking about drivers, talent, you know. But I used to be a car owner like you, and you're always looking for the next, you know, superstar driver, and first thing you look for
exactly.
is some talent, you know, and is that somebody I'd want to drive my race car, and, you know, and taking enough money to keep everything afloat, that was important, but you don't see that today.
No, and you're right, they don't market themselves good at all, you know. Back in the day, so to speak, you had drivers like Reggie Ruggiero and Richie Evans that just showing up at the track, they had such a following that they would fill the grandstands up just being there because people knew they were going to get racing with drivers like that in the show. And with Winston, they picked up on a lot of that on the local level and kept it, you know, in the public eye and kept these followings up to date and strong on the drivers they were following and from track to track. So, you know, but nothing since Winston got out. Like you said, nobody's really working the market or pressing marketing. And I think that's definitely a problem, one of the problems that needs to be addressed in racing right now. And another one I see is NASCAR trying to shift most of their racing to Saturday night, which I don't think it's as bad up in the Northeast or in the Midwest part of the country, but here in the South, if there's a cup race on Saturday night, none of the local tracks will run because through past experiences, they know that people are either gone to that race if it's not too far, or they're sitting at home watching it on TV, or they're having a race viewing party somewhere, and it's a bunch of people that have got together to watch the race. So the local tracks just don't run on Saturday nights, and the more NASCAR wants to go to Saturday night, they're talking about putting lights up at New Hampshire and turning one of those races into a night race. And with Richmond giving up a night race, who knows, they might switch. So what do you think, Mario?
I can see your point. It's not as prevalent here in New England. I don't think it's a life or death thing with the cup race and as much as in other parts of the country. But I think they need to look at a lot of things. You know, I was here for the last regime change, and when Jim Hunter and Jim France
yeah.
came in, Jim Hunter was a brilliant guy. You know, then he was a racer, he was a writer, he was a trainer, he was everything, and he was the go-to guy. You know, that was like 82, 83. They came in and, you know, with Hunter in charge, you know, he retired so many times and they kept bringing him back. And I think the last time was after Dale Sr. got killed. And, you know, they needed somebody to handle that situation because that could have been the end of everything. And obviously he handled it quite well. But
yeah.
since he's been gone, you know, the parade through the door, you know, are they really racing people? I don't know. I mean, Steve O'Donnell speaks very well. I can't say you don't, but I don't really know. I know he has a little bit of a racing background, but his claim to fame is something with the Peach Bowl or something. And he does speak well, I got to say that. I don't know how well he knows the sport. And, you know, to me, Brian Francis dropped the ball big time. You know, he sits up there with the rose-colored glasses telling everybody, you know, don't look behind that curtain. Everything's fine. Don't look behind that curtain. Everything's fine. You know, and come on, give me a break. You know, I read that stuff every week. And attendance is off, and the ratings are off, and man, it's like, you know, what credibility he got, you know, and this last thing with Tony Stewart, he just turned everybody off with that deal, completely turned everybody off. That was ridiculous. I know Tony called him out a year ago about not being in the garage area, and I think that's his opportunity to get even with him because obviously their champion said something way worse over his radio. And they didn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, when you tell the whole world that the NASCAR's fixed, that's not very good. And they went right over that. And he honed in on what Tony said. You know, give me a break, because Tony called him out for not being in the garage area. I considered his father, Bill Jr. I mean, we had a couple sit-down meetings. And, I mean, that guy was on his deathbed and was in the garage area. I know he was until he got sick. You know, then Jimmy France was there every race in the garage area while Bill Jr. was getting better, and he got better for a while. And that guy was in the garage area, and, boy, I give him a lot of credit. You know, that he was really on his deathbed at the time, but he was there and, you know, talking with everybody and anybody had any questions. And, you know, and there Brian, you know, he's up in the penthouse somewhere in Manhattan somewhere, you know, I guess. And, you know,
watching it on TV.
Do I have respect for that? Absolutely not. You know, I had all the respect in the world for his dad because I know how sick he was. And he still made it there. And in between when he couldn't get there, Jimmy France was there. And it's sorry to see the way things have transpired since then. And obviously things ain't nothing like they were back then. But that's my two cents on it.
Yeah. You got to work with what they give you. But the thing you mentioned about Jim Hunter, Jim Hunter was like the excellent front man for NASCAR. He could handle anything that came up, and he could shield a lot of facts and figures that might not have looked good for NASCAR. But Jim France was, you know, he was the face of NASCAR for so many years, and he was good at it. Does NASCAR need something like that now to be the face of NASCAR instead of Brian France and to shield Brian France's sometimes not quite sharpest answers in the world when he talks to the press?
Right. Yeah, I'd say definitely. Where does it come from? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I consider Jimmy France one of my best friends. I mean, we've been friends for 30-some-odd years now. Anytime, he's just a regular guy. When he talks, things happen. But he doesn't usually get involved that much. And he lets you know, things take their course. And he'd probably be the only one that could step in and make some changes. He has that power and position. And believe me, he's one of my best friends, really. And he's just a great guy to deal with. He's the type, if you call, he's going to get back to you one way or the other if he's not in the next day. And I have all the respect in the world for Jimmy France, and I would really like to see him step up to the plate and maybe make some changes because it was him and Hunter that got everything cranking. Jimmy France was, you know, obviously smart enough to see where Jim Hunter could do work wonders, let me put it that way. And he had the credibility with not only with the racers but the press, and not too many people at NASCAR really had that kind of credibility. And his wisdom, I mean, I'm not really fond of administrators, let me put it that way, but when it comes to Jim Hunter, I'll tell you what, when it comes to Jim Hunter, you know, no matter what, you're gonna see his reasoning. He's going to explain it to you in layman type terms. And by the end of the day, believe me, he would solve the problems without pissing people off, you know, getting this guy mad. And it worked at our level as well as the Cup level. Cause we were in tremendous turmoil when Jim Hunter and Jim France came in 82, that they had come up with this 390 carburetor. And, oh, geez, let me tell you, everybody was against it. You know, a lot of us still had big blocks, and it was going to be the end. And in the long run, it's worked out good. You know, how fast you want to go. Yeah, but especially like at Loudon. I mean, you couldn't ask for better racing than a place at Loudon. Or even, you know, we use a restricted air. There's no problem. The racing's great. Bristol, you know, we don't use a restricted with the 390 carburetor. How fast you want to go. It's worked out good, I got to say that. And when the two Jims come along, Hunter and Jimmy France, I'll tell you a great story. We had a meeting down at the airport during this turmoil over the carburetors, and I'll never forget it. So after the meeting, we were at the bar, and a lot of the competitors were against this, you know, and, you know, I was probably one of them. Maybe not as vocal as some because I was just really starting. You know, I was like 30 years old. It was my first year of big time racing, so I didn't have the clout the other guys did. But we're sitting there, and Jim France goes, Mario, I'll tell you what we're going to do. To prove that our formula is going to work, you know, me and Hunter are going to buy a race car from Troyer. Really? Yep. And we're going to get B&R. If you remember them, they built the engines for Sammy Ard, and they were like sort of quasi-Hendrick type. A lot of stuff came from B&R. And he said, and we're going to have B&R build the engine. And Hunter goes, and you want to know something? We're going to have Sammy Ard drive the race car. And I said, well, I guess you guys do mean business. And before. Yeah, so, I mean, they were serious. And that's the type of you know, Jim Hunter and Jim France were. They put their money where their mouth was and put a product out there. They were serious. And the next meeting, things sort of calmed down, and everything sort of worked out okay. And like I said, here we are, you know, 30 years later, and it's fine. There's no problem. You know, the 390 carburetors worked. Yeah, you got them stumbling blocks, and I'd say now everything's all smoothed out. And I mean, I've been involved back in my racing days where we put the big carburetor on. How much horsepower do you need, you know? We don't need 750 horsepower in them things. Mm-hmm. But it's worked out good. You know, 600 is fine. But that's the type that they were. Mm-hmm.
And you, Jim France is probably best at being the behind-the-scenes guy that he is. You don't hear much about him, but you know he's got Brian France and Lisa France Kennedy's ear. So they're pretty much the two most powerful people in NASCAR right now. What do you think, Mike?
I just wish that Jim would step up and I don't know, take the bull by the horns, bring somebody of his choice in, maybe. I don't see where things are on the upswing. I really don't. I don't care what Brian France says. I think he's going to have a tough time finding a sponsorship for, you know, the Cup division for next year. I would hate to be the one going to a Fortune 500 company and showing them decreasing figures in both attendance and TV ratings. And I mean, I was sort of privy to the we were working with Verizon Wireless back in 2000, 2001, just before I got out of racing, team ownership. And so through Verizon Wireless, I was sort of privy to a lot of the information, what was going on with Nextel. And that was a $70 million deal, $30 million to the sanctioning body, and $40 million to promote the sport. It was a lot of money. And even Verizon Wireless said that they thought it was ridiculous to put that amount in one particular spot. Anyway, so I know what the numbers were at the time with Nextel, and I want to see how they're going to make out next year. And, you know, and hopefully true to grade, find out here what the real numbers are. But I can't see. It's a tough sell. It really is a tough sell. And, you know, I wish them luck. I know that, you know, Sprint's been great, spent a lot of money, but, you know, they're gone. So I don't know who they would replace them with and for what kind of numbers. I don't know. I know that in the middle division, they've never replaced the numbers that they used to get from Busch Beer. I know that. You know, they have series sponsors, but not at the level that Busch used to be at, you know, and there was a little bit of hard-headedness there. And, you know, they got Xfinity. I know it ain't Busch numbers. You know, I'm sort of up on the marketing. That's what I did. And, you know, that was my college. And when it comes to my own race team, I mean, that was the most important thing. I had to market my race team where we had corporate sponsorship because there was never a resident millionaire at 44, believe me. And that race car had to generate money or, you know, we couldn't eat, my crew couldn't eat, we couldn't make it to the racetrack. And between product sponsors and corporate sponsorship, you know, I depended on my marketing end of it to make that successful. And I'm not bragging or nothing, but, you know, we made it. You know, we were there, you know, race after race. And that was all through marketing. But once again, it was a much better economy. I'm not, you know, I realize that. I was lucky to do what we did at that particular time. It would be tough in this day and age to repeat what we were able to do with our little race team and stuff in this economy. It was a lot easier than I could knock on the door. And, you know, even at our level, I wasn't embarrassed to ask for 6 digits today.
No.
Yeah, today I think twice
mask,
about it.
Mask, you ain't going to get it.
No, you know, and even the product stuff is nothing like when I raced, you know. Oh, geez, I mean, we were so lucky. We had a tire war going on. People have no idea what that was like for the car owner. I mean, we were benefactors. It was great working with the tire, both of them. Goodyear and Hoosier were, you know, I work with both of them. They're great to work with. And I know you're a tire specialist, but it's nothing like when there's a tire war going on. And it was a good one. It was nothing more underhanded. You know, the rules were laid down. Everybody played according to the rules. I was with both companies, so I know. And we were with Goodyear from 87 to 94, and then 95 till, you know, I got out of team ownership in 01 with Hoosier. And both were great to work with. When we started with Goodyear, I mean, they're involved Formula One at the time, sports car racing, Indy car racing, engineers up the yang-yang. But as time went on, you know, the Goodyear that I dealt with in the 80s wasn't the Goodyear in the 90s. You know, they were cut back. And I could see the handwriting on the wall. And, you know, and my policy always was, as long as our deal remained the same, I was with Bilstein for 30 years. And mm-hmm. we were the first ones to bring them into oval racing through M&H Tire. And we were with them for 30 years, and I have plenty of offers over the years, but, you know, they're good to me, and I couldn't even fathom it. But you could see the Goodyear thing was starting to go away, and I was lucky to have the opportunity to hook up with Hoosier. Really surprised me. Boy, they had some great engineers. You know, there was no bottom to the well. Whatever it took to win, even though one's a Fortune 500 company and Hoosier's privately owned, believe me, they didn't spare anything to win races. And in the long run, you know, it's worked out. They're exclusive since 01. And I tell you what, Bob Newton, he was a racer. That guy was a racer. They wanted to win. There was no, you know, well, this is a little expensive, and that never heard that. Never heard that. Whatever it took to make the absolute best possible race tire, you know, they put that product out there, as Goodyear did too. I mean, they both tested extensively, and you know, those are perks that racers don't have anymore. We did a 2-day test at Richmond for Goodyear. That paid us $12,500 for 2 days of testing.
There you go.
You know, and every Hoosier test, was it was $5,000, but that's not bad for a day pay. And on top of it, they paid the driver, the crew chief, everybody that worked on the race car, obviously picked up hotel rooms and meals and transportation. And those are perks that they ain't going to see anymore. Those are the benefits of the well, you know, you say tire war, it was competition. Let me put it that way. And boy, that added a lot to our racing. You know, the top 10 car owners on both sides, Goodyear and Hoosier, were the benefactors of that. And you don't have that anymore. And that was a big part of national attention on our division, the modified, because there was a tire war going on. And no matter what kind of car you race, you either had Goodyears or Hoosiers back then, and everybody around the country was interested in who's winning the tire war and the modifieds at the time. You know, it was a big part of my racing. Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a pretty big deal, and you had to keep up with what the other side was doing to see if there was a difference, track to track, really,
mm-hmm.
and make the choice out of which one you're going to run. A lot of people did that, and there was a lot of people like you that stayed loyal as long as it was working.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you had a question you wanted to ask?
Yeah, how you doing, Mario?
Not too bad. Yourself, Mike?
Good. There's really two things that I really see when you were talking about, like, sponsorship and what you had sponsoring you. You don't see gas companies getting involved anymore like you had Gulf. You know, they go to the big stick and ball sports or whatever, and you don't see like a car being sponsored by an oil by a gas and oil company, at least in the modified division. You see that maybe in the Sprint Cup, but not in the small, you know, in the local track racing anymore.
I think
you were one of the first
motors
to do that.
I was with Gulf Oil from 96 to 99, and at the end of, during 99, Gulf Oil has what they call a jobber council that sort of makes suggestions on where they should go with their advertising budget. And in 99, Gulf Oil was headquartered in Chelsea, Mass., outside of Boston. 99 was also the year they had the All-Star game at Fenway Park. Ted Williams was there, everybody was there, and it seemed like that sort of was a catalyst. Gulf Oil decided to do Major League Baseball the following year. And like I said, Mario Fiore's race team was no competition for John Henry's Boston Red Sox, and that sort of got the ball rolling with Gulf Oil and Major League Baseball. They came up with a $5 million program their first year. They targeted the teams here in the Northeast, other than the Yankees. The Yankees priced themselves right out. They did the Mets, they did the Pittsburgh, they did Philly, obviously Boston, and they didn't do the Yankee. The Yankee numbers were out of sight. So that's where our Gulf Oil, they took a bunch of programs, marketing programs, and they cut ours. They cut Foxwood. They had a big promotional deal with Foxwoods, and they cut that out. And they had a big ski promotion with the ski resorts up here, and they cut them out to come up with this budget for Major League Baseball, which has worked out great. I mean, there's no getting around it. They're real big in Boston. We had 4 years. That's pretty good. That wasn't a gift. That was a cold call where we submitted a proposal. It was a 2-month project, really, to get everything wrapped up. And, we had to sit down. They didn't know me and Reggie, and, we didn't know them. So it was really a legitimate deal. It was not a gift or somebody I knew somewhere and, money trickled down. But, no, it was right as over the table as over the table could come. And we introduced a race car down in Palm Beach, Florida at the Breakers, like something like Formula One would do. That's the way Gulf did everything top shelf, and brought the race car down there. They had all their big oil customers there, and they put on a shindig for everybody. And, we introduced the car. It was up on the stage behind the – they actually wanted us to try to drive it in, but there was no way that we could get it in the building without ripping the oil pan off, so – we decided
that would have been a sight.
Because just before we were there, Dale Jarrett was there with Johnson & Johnson. They sponsored his Busch car, and they were able, but that car had 5-inch clearance where we had 2. So we decided we put it on the stage, put the curtain around it. It had the big smoke show, big ribbon on it with the big scissors and everything, and the Gulf Oil president and Reggie cut the ribbon, and they took a bunch of pictures, and then we had it set up where all the oil customers could come and get their picture taken in the race car. And I mean, that you don't see that at this level, believe me. But when you're with a Fortune 500 company like that, it was that's the way they wanted to do it. They didn't want a word said until we did this down up in Palm Beach, Florida, and they paid for everything, and it was. It's something you never forget. That just don't happen at this level. But they did everything. We did hospitality at least half a dozen tracks a year, 500 people hospitalities, and they did print advertising. We had a show car program with them, and they did everything the right way. It was a great. We're still friends today. I mean, they did offer to sponsor us the following year for any race that we were going to run at New Hampshire, because back then we ran as many as 4 races at New Hampshire. And I just didn't think it was in my best interest of going out and trying to find a replacement when you've given your best races away already. So I respectfully declined, and like I said, we're still.
You can't beat perfection, right?
Right. You
can't beat perfection.
It was a
but
tough choice,
thing,
you know. They offered, and it was like, I'm going to leave my options open. And we went after what was Bell Atlantic Mobile at the time, turned into Verizon Wireless. Put a lot of effort into it. Painted the car red, black and red and everything. And 2 days before the Sizzler, Thursday, spring Sizzler, I get the FedEx. After the whole winter of meetings with their marketing company down in Manhattan, Bozell Worldwide, with their media companies and media, get the FedEx saying, you know, thanks for thinking of us. We respectfully got to decline the opportunity. Wish you luck. Like, oh boy, what do I do now? We already had the car painted and everything, and we ended up winning the championship that year. So, just one of them things, you know. Verizon was brand new. They became a company in April of 2000, which is right when our Sizzler was, and they changed the people that we put all the time in over the winter. That marketing company ended up losing the deal to another one, so. That sort of didn't. They weren't familiar with us, and you know, like I said, they just weren't going to do anything new. What are you going to do? I learned a lot.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was rivalries. You know, now with the Whalen tour, there are a few. You know, we got guys like Jimmy Salamito. We had him on the program, and Justin Bonsignor, who run, you know, and who know each other from Long Island, but. I remember when you guys used to come in, first of all, the stands used to either be in your colors or Richie Evans' colors, and you guys were all chasing after Richie, you know.
Do
you think the rivalries are the same, you know?
No, I don't think it's nearly as intense as it used to be. Obviously, we raced a lot more, too. Back in our teddy bear pool days, back in the in the late 80s, we'd race 75 times a year. So we're, you know, our name was constantly, you know, Reg was constantly in the news no matter what, when you race that much. And they don't race a lot now. And really, we were like a quasi a farm team for Richie. Richie helped us a lot, you know, and obviously we ran one of his race cars. I mean, they race hard, believe me. We got into it a couple times with Richie after a race. He didn't like to lose, I can tell you that. And there were some times that it wasn't pleasant after, because no matter what, when we raced back then, a big part of the racing was the fun after the race. You know, no matter what racetrack, we'd go to Stafford, we'd all go out in the parking lot, have a cookout. There was always plans what we're going to do after the race. And then the next night, we'd be Riverside Park. We'd go to across the street to Josie's, TJ's. And a lot of people ended up at my shop because we're right next door, and I come back in the morning and there are people just conked out their cars. And, that was a big part of our race. And then Thompson was like the best of them all because we raced at Thompson on Sunday. And then after, I mean, the clubhouse was great. I mean, we had, there just so much went on. And then even when that closed, we'd go out in the parking lot and everybody hang out, and then down the street to the diner. And I'm telling you, we'd be headed back towards my way. We'd get Richie in front of us, and we'd be getting off the Mass Turnpike. And I'm telling you, the sun was coming up, and Richie had three hours plus more to go. So it was like, man, those weekends were, you know, racing and having fun. That was a big part of it. And, you know, I did some traveling with the 22 team when my buddy Tom Barrett was driving for him, and that didn't happen. There was none of that. You know, there was, you know, that was a difference between when I raced and the way they race now. You know, it seems like they call it a business, but it's not really. But they don't have that fun part like we did when we raced. And I'm telling you, that was big. No matter what, there was always, okay, next week this one's going to bring this. We have big cookouts and everything. And, you know, Richie was a big proponent of that too, because he liked to have fun. And, you know, nobody raced harder than him. And it was like.
Yeah, they had – that was the big thing about it. You could have a rivalry up until the checkered flag, and then everybody was friends, and they wanted to party together. And now it seems like the only rivalries you ever hear of are between drivers and the sanctioning body. And NASCAR is a big example of that. I mean, you know, you can take the Tony Stewart fiasco. That's just created a divide there, and it gives the haters something else to talk about as far as NASCAR goes, and their Brian France is killing NASCAR and everything. But, you know, and they talk about the attendance, too, taking out seats, you know, out of all the tracks, and they talk about the low ratings, and I'm just wondering, you know, are the low ratings and the empty seats because people have an interest in the chase and they're saving their money and saving their travel and everything for one of the chase races instead of one of the regular season races? I think about that, and I think, you know, a lot of these seats they're taking out were seats they added in the 90s and the early 2000s when NASCAR was booming, and they needed more seats to put more butts in the track. So what's your take? I don't know really,
to me,
you know, what's causing this problem.
It's a perfect example how terrible their marketing is. First off, you got Tony Stewart. I mean, he's a hero to so many of us. He's coming back active racing. That's what we want to hear about. We don't want to hear about a $35,000 fine because Brian France has it in for him because he called him out. And then the past couple weeks, my feeling, I don't throw compliments at it, as you can see, but the racing at Bristol, both Saturday and Sunday, and the same with Richmond, was great. That's the best racing in a long time. And what are we talking about on Monday? Come on.
Yeah.
The racing was outstanding. They're talking about lug nuts because NASCAR screwed up with their rule change, which I don't care what they say. That was a safety thing. The drivers are saying, my wheels are loose. Who are they kidding? I mean, that was a safety thing because they want to save money on inspectors on pit road. So they expect the teams to police themselves. And then they get mad at Tony because he mentioned safety, which they had no regard for whatsoever when they changed the rule. And instead of talking about the great racing that took place the past couple weekends, and like I said, I ain't throwing no compliments their way unless it's really well-deserved. And we're talking about lug nuts. What kind of marketing is that? Give me a break. Come on. How stupid can they be? I love the format in those Infinity races, the shorter racing. Like I said, I don't throw compliments at them, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching both weekends. And Monday morning, they're talking about lug nuts. You know, how stupid
is that? They totally miss, you know, the big story. And what are they selling other than racing? They're not selling lug nuts. They're not selling controversy. They need to be selling racing because that's what the whole deal is built up over. I mean, you know, I realize bad publicity, good publicity, it's all publicity, so it all helps. But do you think it's driving fans away, NASCAR's wishy-washy attitude toward the rules and everything?
I can speak for myself. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to hear about lug nuts because they screwed something up. I enjoyed the racing. I really did. I like that shorter format. I'm not a fan of three-hour races. Obviously, I grew up short tracks, and that's what I enjoy. And I really believe that the United States of America race fans do not want to sit there for 3 hours. We all have attention spans, and I think they should really seriously look at that as shortening the races. I just thought those Xfinity races were really exciting.
Definitely.
I like that type of a format, you know, and it's not that usual that they hit on something, and they did. And we don't even hear about it. We're talking about lug nuts. Come on, jeez.
What do you think about the heat race deal? There's really no reward to make you race that hard in there, you know, as opposed to a short track where they only take a limited number of the top finishers out of a heat. Do you think they need that in the heat races for the Xfinity to make these drivers run harder, knowing they're not guaranteed a spot?
Absolutely. Absolutely got to make it worthwhile because, hey, listen, you know, you own cars, I own cars. the main event's coming up. That's paying all the money. Keep everything as close to 100% as you can. And you can't blame the competitors. But like you said, to make it worthwhile, maybe only half of them get in. There's a big number on the top for the people that finish in the top five positions or something. So there is some type of reward for that. I know they take the top two in each for the 100 grand, but that's one thing. But it didn't seem like it, nobody put anything to chance in those heat races. Definitely it was better at Richmond than it was at Bristol.
I think
a little better.
The hot ticket to me would be make it like the Winston. Have two longer length heat races. Take a limited number out of them, like you said, maybe take the top half. And then have, not the gimmicky all-star race with all the different pit stops and everything, but have a sprint among the top guys. Like you said, it's hard to hold somebody's interest when cars get strung out and they've still got 100 laps to go, Make it a 30-lap, 50-lap sprint, something like that, and see if that doesn't keep the fan interested more.
They definitely have something to work with there. And, hey, give them a shot, make improvements. The main events were good, especially the one with I really enjoyed watching Larson and Bush go through the traffic like that because, obviously I've been to Bristol and I know how fast everybody's going. And, boy, you don't have but a millisecond to think on what you're going to do because they're on top of each other. And I really appreciate it. Watching them two go through the traffic like that. That's like the old days, boy. Traffic was so important back then and the short tracks and stuff. And I mean, they're two of the best. And that was pretty awesome. And
after
that race was over, I know they
didn't
win.
I said, watching Kyle Larson race, you get the impression that the driver is better than the car that he's in. And
I think
he shows that week in and week out. He can definitely drive, and he showed he could drive at Bristol. So maybe he just needs more car or a better car.
Yeah, but I listened to Felix the other day on Sirius Radio, and he said the same thing, that the best driver can't win in a mediocre car, but a mediocre driver can win in the best cars. And he, that makes all the sense in the world. And he admitted that, they're working, but, right now they're not the best, obviously. And he didn't pull no punches. Felix tells it like it is. And I always look forward to his interviews because he ain't going to leave nothing on the table. He's going to tell it just like it is. And,
Felix is always for a quote.
He ain't sugarcoating nothing.
Not Felix. It's good that he can speak out. It would be better if NASCAR would let the drivers speak out more, let them show more emotion, let people know that they're interested in their sport and they want to improve it. But NASCAR wants to muzzle them and be politically correct, and racing has never been politically correct, and I doubt it ever will be.
I feel strongly that they're picky choosy on who they find. Obviously Junior spoke out on the safety of the lug nut thing, and nothing came about it. And like I said, their champion said the races were fixed. Nothing came about it. But Tony's still the one that called out Brian France for not being in the garage area. And I don't care what anybody says. I think he was looking for the opportunity to get back at him. And that's creepy. I'm not stupid. I know. I listened to Tony, and he's been a lot more politically correct than he was with what he had to say. And he voiced the concern, and obviously it worked. And the drivers, I just listened to 27, the driver tonight, and he totally agreed with Tony. And he said, I can't think of his name. Menard. and Menard, and
yeah.
He was on the radio tonight. He totally agreed with Tony. You know, everything's, you know, they're looking at, because Tony spoke out, they're revisiting it. And he said on two occasions this year he had to come down to pit road because he had loose wheels. They had only hit three, and he agreed with Tony. You know, like he said, they're taking action because Tony spoke out. And he didn't see anything wrong with what Tony said, which I didn't either. But like I said, he called out Brian France for not being in the garage area, and not too many people ever done that before. So,
Tony kind of pointed out what was obvious to everybody else. He was just the one that spoke up.
Right.
But he spoke up really to the wrong forum. NASCAR has a policy they came out with in 2002 that I'll paraphrase. anyone questions NASCAR's safety efforts in an interview, they're going to get fined. And NASCAR, you know, that's what they did to Tony. It wasn't so much what he commented on as the fact that he commented to the media instead of going to OSHA or somebody else. And it's kind of a backhanded way to get around him where NASCAR can still cover their ass with that rule instead of saying, yeah, we jumped on him because, you know, he pointed out about the lug nuts and everything. So then again, quote Felix Sabatis, NASCAR is a benevolent dictatorship. And that's a pretty good description of just how NASCAR is run.
They're a sandbox. No matter what, they come up with in the public eye, they look terrible for what they did with Tony.
Yeah.
Because they find him, and then they did what he asked them to do. So they can come up with every kind of rule and this clause and that chapter and whatever. John Q. Public America does not look kindly on NASCAR for that whole thing. That's bad PR. Bad PR.
Bad PR. And, you know, while we're speaking about bad PR, what do you think about the fact that people are comparing NASCAR more and more to professional wrestling as far as the outcomes are already predetermined, and they talk about the phantom caution flags and things like that? Do you think that's something that's hurting NASCAR and maybe is holding up the fact that they haven't announced a new series sponsor when Sprint leaves this year?
It definitely can't help. I've thrown enough barbs at them over time, but I do not believe it. Anything's fixed. You're a competitor. I was a competitor. I've really never seen anything like that where they actually went out of their way to fix a finish or that favoritism one way or the other. I've never seen it. You know, and I ain't buying what Kyle Busch said. I know he said it in anger, but you know, it's not good PR. People, we were lucky. We were competitors, so we sort of know the other side of the fence. The person that sits in the grandstand doesn't really know that side of the fence, and it can definitely influence people.
That's a way you can defend Kyle Busch and what he said. You know, he said it in anger and everything, and yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, it's like he threw gasoline on that NASCAR fixes racing fire. So it's a double-edged sword, and people are just tired of it now. It's gotten to the point where everybody questions everything about NASCAR.
One of the things that I was struck by, we were talking before about the driver versus, you know, the not bad drivers, but mediocre drivers winning in good cars and vice versa. When Chase Elliott did so well early, people were wondering, how did he get that ride in Hendricks, you know, in Jeff Gordon's 24? Well, that's why he was, you know, that's why he was strong early. Because he was in a Hendrick car.
Right. Great team. I mean, it's a championship caliber race team. You know, he does a good job. I mean, he's earned his way up there. It wasn't like he just popped up on the scene. definitely won races in the lower divisions. And Napa, you know, he brought Napa with him. And he deserves it. You know, there's no getting around. He's doing a good job. I mean, people are picking him for this weekend to win the race because we know the team's good and kid's a good little race driver. And that's really worked out. That's the type of advancement in racing that I appreciate, because back in my day, you had to accomplish something the lower levels before you got to race on the modified tour. You know, that's supposed to be the elite drivers here in the Northeast, and that doesn't exist anymore. And I have a tough time with that. I really do. Because
got it split between two touring divisions now, don't they?
Well, there is a lower division called the MRS, Modified Racing Series. And half of those kids that are racing on the Modified Tour they couldn't win an MRS race. Let me put it that way. I could go down half of that field that runs on the NASCAR Tour, couldn't win at the lower level. You know, I've experienced both, you know,
Mario, I'll mention one name to you that's been on our show that's also, well, I know well for like since 1976, almost as long as I've known you when you used to come down. But he's driving for Flamingo, who's in New England now, but Timmy Salamito. Started out as like a 16-year-old, I think, in the modifieds. Got his whole family working on the car for him. He could probably win anywhere right now.
it's a really good team. I mean, I'm not familiar with Timmy. I watched a video of him and Justin going at it in a 100-lapper, and Justin was easy on him. Justin was easy on him, but he did a good job. You know, it was a good race, and you know, Justin's one of my good friends, and I really followed his career, and you know, he won at the lower level before he went modified tour racing, and you know, he's with a really good race team, and he's one of them drivers that, to me, you know, he earned what he got, and where he is right now. You know, obviously Doug Colby, I've known him, you know, I knew his father, he used to race with his father, and Doug was going to college and racing at the same time, and I give him a lot of credit for that. And he'd be at Stafford on Friday night. He was going to the University of Richmond, and he'd make it back and run the pro stock on Friday night. And you know, I can appreciate that. You know, and with Doug.
Yeah, definitely.
And and Ryan, he's a really good race driver. He sort of worked his way up. I used to have a chrome business. I used to chrome the Nerf bars and stuff for people. So I knew his dad used to race pro stocks. So I was at a flea market. Dad comes up, says, "Oh, I got some stuff for you to chrome, you know, Nerf bars and stuff." I said, "Oh, did you buy a modified?" And he goes, "Oh yeah." I said, "Wow, you're not going to run the pro stock no more?" He said, "No, it's for my son." I said, "Are you kidding? I was just 14. So Ryan, and they were headed to New Smyrna, and Ryan did good. He stayed out of trouble. You know, he didn't try to be a hero. Obviously, I have a lot of experience at New Smyrna, and that place can bite you in a heartbeat. Oh, God. And I followed Ryan, you know, and he did it for a 14-year-old. He didn't run top five, but he ran 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and stayed out of trouble, brought the car home in one piece. And, you know, at the end of the series, I said to myself, you know, that kid's got a good head on his shoulder. He's going to be good. And he definitely earned, you know, where he is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I personally saw all three of those guys on
somebody you can keep an eye on. Mario, we're about out of time, but I appreciate you coming on. I enjoyed talking with you. Glad to hear your opinions. And I'm sure some of the people listening, you gave them something to think about, another way to look at things. So thank
you
again
for
coming on, bud. And I want to get you back on later on in the year. You know, we'll see if what we talked about tonight, if anything changes, and let's plan on getting back together and talk about that again.
Steve, always my pleasure. I appreciate the invite.
Anytime, bud.
Take care, man.
Okay.
Good night,
Steve and Mike. I appreciate it.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Be good.
All righty now. Well, that's going to about wrap it up for us. Let's get our social media contacts out of the way. How can people follow you, Mike?
Okay, they got me on Facebook, my personal page, and as always on Steve's page as well. I end up posting, I guess, about two things a day if I can find anything that's not duplicated or whatever. I am learning to check the page before I post. And also on Twitter at Stats108. And that's my three social network areas. And I'm once the season starts at Riverhead, which will be in 2 weeks, I plan on doing a blog. And also, when I get back to doing weekly over there, it'll be a column. I've always done racing with Riverhead Raceway Hot Laps is the name of the column. And you'll be able to read that online as well. So that's
cool
where
deal.
We're
sounds like you got a lot going on, but a lot of information getting out at the same time, so that's great. If you people want to follow me, and I don't owe you money, the best way to keep up with me is on Twitter. I'm at Big Sweat, the NASCAR Heartbreaker and Home Wrecker. Facebook, come to my group, NASCAR and Other Racing. You'll find it very entertaining and very educational, too. We try to answer questions and put articles out there to help people understand all types of motorsports better. Because I figured the better you understand it, the better you enjoy it, and the bigger fan you become. So come check the group out. It's NASCAR and Other Racing. And I also have a blog I put out on Tuesdays, more of an unadulterated look at what I think's going on in NASCAR and my opinions. It's called NASCAR Shit, Racing with Big Sweat. So it's at blog.com, so check that out. And we'll close out with Mr. CJ Sports. He's got a lot going on, so tell us what you got, CJ.
You guys should check out the 110 Nation Sports Show tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Also, make sure you guys check us out on Twitter. You can follow us at 110 Nation, or check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports.
There you go, people. I haven't got anybody confirmed for next week, but I'm still working on it. And if you know anybody you think would be good on this show or just need some publicity or a forum that they could plug for, send me a PM or message me at Racing with Big Sweat Facebook group, NASCAR and Other Racing Facebook group, or send a message to 110 Nation Sports group. So if you know somebody, let me know, and I guarantee you I'll get them on. And that's going to kick it out for us tonight, folks. Come back and see us next Thursday night, 9 o'clock, and thank you for being here tonight. Good night, y'all.